Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Time for another Word Balloon podcast. It's John Suntris adjusting the microphone and welcoming you back to some more great pop culture comic book conversation. And we got a great guest for you today. It's the return of Greg Pak. Now, Greg, as I say in my introduction with Greg, really bailed me out last year at San Diego Comic-Con because he came on a panel of our comic book podcasting panel. And it was great to get his perspective as a guest on podcasts of, you know, what he thinks of what's been going on with the podcasting world. I mean, this was the 10th anniversary of our podcasting panels, and it was great to get his point of view. Well, he's back today. It's funny because he was teasing Kingsway West even last summer, and it's just coming out. In fact, it just came out, first issue, this Wednesday, today, as I'm presenting this episode. And great to have Greg on. He explains why there was a delay by his choice, and he feels like he's made a better first issue because of it. I would agree. I don't know what it was would have been prior to this release that finally just happened this week, but excellent first issue, great Western story. It's got a little steampunk in there and a little mysticism, some magic, but it's a great Western, and I love Westerns, and it's great to talk to Greg about Westerns and Kingsway West. We also talk about the Totally Awesome Hulk because he is a main part of Civil War, and some big things have happened in the Hulk universe. I'm sure you're well aware of it. Bruce Banner has been killed by Hawkeye. How does Amadeus Cho, the Totally Awesome Hulk, react? It's a big question, and we're getting into that. Last week, Civil War released The Fallen, which also explored the Hulk universe reaction to the loss of Bruce Banner, and Greg wrote that. Now, we spoke before that came out, so I didn't have a chance to read that for this interview. I have since read it. It was fantastic. Of course it was. Greg also has a great project at Boom, and that is Escape from New York meets Big Trouble in Little China. So we're finally getting Jack Burton and Snake Plissken together, which is really interesting and I think a lot of fun. And Greg is obviously a big fan of both franchises. Got to talk to John Carpenter about the characters and give him his story pitch. Interesting stories there. So tremendous to talk to Greg. And also, he just always is a busy guy. He's got his kids' books that he's been working on, some e-books and things like that. So he's just one of those creatives that I like to catch up with and find out what he's doing to spread his brand to the geek market. So wonderful to talk to Greg Pak on today's episode of Word Balloon. It's all brought to you by the League of Word Balloon listeners. Thank you, League, for your great support, and I appreciate that through Patreon. Word Balloon is free. It's always going to be free, but if you want to help the cause and subscribe to Word Balloon, I even had more people subscribe this week. You can go to patreon.com/wordballoon. And see the subscription page there, or if you go to wordballoon.com and click on the Patreon tabs there, it will take you to my Patreon page and my video, and just, you know, hey, thanks for the support. I really do appreciate it. It really does help out in terms of helping the costs of the podcast and helping me get to conventions and make new connections as far as guests and panels and things that I try to present to you each week on Word Balloon. I think you get unique entertainment from Word Balloon. If you think so, and if you think it's worth $1, $2, the price of a comic book, given the hours of entertainment I try to provide each month, I hope you think so. And if you can spare it, that would be great. I really do appreciate the help. Word Balloon is also brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. There are great deals happening this week at InStock Trades from some of our Word Balloon regulars, people like Tom King. Omega Men, The End is Here. The trade paperback is finally out. 50% off. It's the complete Omega Man story, one of the bright lights of the new 52. 50% off. It's just $12.49. Brian Bendis and Alex Maleev present Scarlet Book 2. And that premier hardcover is now available at 50% off. It's just $12.49. You can also get the Spider-Man by Todd McFarlane Omnibus hardcover, 45% off. It's $41.25. And let's look up Greg Pak and get some great Greg Pak discounts from InStockTrades.com. I'm doing this as we speak. You can get things. You know, Greg was an excellent writer of Battlestar Galactica for Dynamite, and several of those trade paperbacks are now available at great prices. You can get Trade Paperback Volume 2, which has either the photographic cover, featuring Baltar and Number Six, and also a Number Six cover from Stepan Sejic. Nigel Rayner was the artist in the interiors, but it's a great presentation of Volume 2 of Battlestar Galactica from Greg Pak. 30% off, just $10.49. You can also get the Battlestar Galactica Omnibus trade paperback at 30% off, $17.49. And that's Greg's complete run. He mentions Turok in our conversation. You get the Turok Dinosaur Hunter Volume 2 trade paperback at 30% off, just $11.89. There's, of course, the Great Planet Hulk, one of the greatest Hulk stories ever. And Greg was the guy who wrote it. 45% off, $19.24. Just a few. Here is another one. Silver Surfer Devolution. Greg Pak, wonderful story. 45% off, $8.24. Just the tip of the iceberg of some of the great Greg Pak product you can get at InStockTrades.com. Go check out the deals for yourself at their website, InStockTrades.com. Okay, without further ado, I am happy to welcome back Greg Pak to Word Balloon.
He's back. It's been about a year now that I think about it, Greg Pak, because you fished me out of a jam for San Diego last year at the podcast panel.
That's right. That was fun.
And then I think we followed up in August with more. I thought we did.
Yeah, we did. We talked about, was that about ABC Disgusting then, or I can't remember now.
It probably was, or as I like to call it, The Princess Who Can't Spell.
Oh, yeah.
No, that was the other one.
Yeah, that was the other one.
You got two.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's right. No, ABC Disgusting. You're right. That's like all just, you know, it's fun to say poop and let's spell poop correctly and all that stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, we were talking about the kids' books. Those were the kids' books.
But also Kingsway West, because this was, you know.
Oh, right. Well, back when we first announced. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, wasn't it supposed to come? Well, first of all, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
And, and I had another icebreaker for you. Boy, I'm totally blowing my, if this were the Tonight Show, I'd be canceled now. So I meant to tell you, in May, I saw your buddy, Jonathan Colton.
Oh, cool.
And it was fantastic. And it was just him. But no, it was great. And I live right by the theater. And literally, I was just getting exercise and walking in one of my favorite parts of Chicago. And I'm walking by this theater that I live by. And it's like, tonight, Jonathan Colton. And I'm like,
oh, nice.
That's awesome. I got nothing to do. I'm going to go see Jonathan.
Oh, that's great. Excellent.
So I walked up. I bought two tickets. I took a friend and we had a great time. It was excellent.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, I actually haven't seen him live in a while. I need to do that myself. I haven't. He has been producing more music and traveling a lot recently.
Pretty cool, man.
But yeah, no, that's cool.
Let's get back to now. Kingsway West. I've already promoted it in the opening. It's Dark Horse Comics. It's a steampunk western with some fantasy in it.
Yeah, yeah. It's
all fair descriptions and
yeah,
stuff.
I think so. It's about a Chinese gunslinger searching for his wife in an old west overrun with magic. So we're kind of combining genres and playing some big games here, and it's been a blast, man. Mirko Kolek is drawing.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, he's just killing
gorgeous. Where'd you find him?
Well, I worked with him on Red Skull Incarnate, which was the Red Skull origin story for Marvel back when.
And I believe you told me this last year when we talked about Kings.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad you reminded me. Thank you. Then, which was awesome. Well, go on. You.
And then we worked together also on the Turek book for Dynamite. And in both of those books, he just did this amazing job drawing like regular people and drawing stuff that historical stuff, you know, like because the both of those books drew a lot from history and he was just a demon with detail with that kind of stuff and also he just loves outdoor adventure stories. We've been talking about doing something together, and I said, well, I've got this Western I've been thinking about. He was like, I'm in.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he just loved the idea of doing it. And then as the story grew, it became this, a Western with these fantastical elements, this magical Western kind of world. And I hadn't actually, the stuff I'd done with Mirko had been fairly realistic. I mean, we did have dinosaurs in the Turek book, but it wasn't pure fantasy. But he totally just loved the challenge and has totally risen to the occasion. And it's this great combination of just really gritty, real feeling Western looking stuff, outdoor, landscapes and everything.
Along John Ford John Ford kind of costumes. Big Sky Country.
Exactly. Along with this just crazy fantastical stuff that he's doing. He's just going nuts with it. And it's a great combo. I just love it. And Will Quintana is doing the colors, and Simon Boland is lettering. And these are both folks I've worked with a lot on other stuff. And it's been a really great crew. They really care and are really bringing their A games.
It's gorgeous. And yeah, I like the alternate history. I mean, can I reveal and can we talk about some of the thing about this backdrop and everything? Because there's a portion of what would be the United States that's being controlled by Mexico. There's a sliver that seems to be controlled by either the Chinese directly or an Asian group. They do say Chinese.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is Chinese. So yeah, and also there's the mineral that everyone is kind of the spice of your doom. Is this red gold?
Yes. Yeah, it's kind of like, imagine the gold rush happened, but instead of finding gold, they found red gold. And red gold is the substance in this world that is the source of what they call extramundial phenomenon. So it's basically the source of magic in this world. And so it becomes the most valuable commodity around. It's like oil and magic and everything all wrapped up together. And, so all of these different communities are and empires and republics are fighting over it. And our story picks up basically years after gold was first discovered. And there's been a 13 year red gold war between the Chinese run. There's the Queen of Golden City.
Yeah, Golden City. Okay,
that's in Northern California, and the Mexican ruled República de los Californios in the Southwest. And then there are other communities.
Territories.
Territories. That's a good word. In the mix as well. And our characters are kind of the people on the ground who are caught in the middle of all this this crazy mayhem. Our hero is Kingsway Law, who is a Chinese soldier who fought during this war, fought for the Queen, defended his people, but found himself committing horrible atrocities, and he walks away from it all at the end of the war. He becomes an outlaw. He's actually chased by the Queen's soldiers.
Yeah, there's a bounty on his head.
Exactly, there's a bounty on his head, and he falls in love with a Mexican woman who's had similar kinds of horrific experiences, and they disappear into the wild, which is this kind of uncharted territory. And that's where he thinks he's just going to live out there alone with his wife in peace. But as our story picks up, peace doesn't come so easy for gunslingers ever. So
absolutely,
there's a mysterious Chinese woman with a magic sword comes searching for the legendary Kingsway Law. She wants his help. She wants his gun, and his wife ends up disappearing, and he's drawn back into this insane world of violence, and has to decide what he's going to do.
Complications ensue.
Exactly.
Yep. No, good start, man. It was a really good first chapter. I think, that's the thing. It gives you the feel of this is what the environment is. These are the players. Do you want to keep going? I mean, Freddie and I, Venlanti and I just talked about Weird Detective. The thing. It's like, you got to make these first issues count. And I think you guys did. So nice going.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And I do. I love a good Western. I love a good steampunk story. And I love when they manage to get together. So, give me some of your Western influences. What are you a fan of as far as the show?
Oh, man. Well, I grew up in Texas, and so I watched a lot of them over the years. I mean, High Noon was the first Western that just blew my mind.
Great movie.
Loved it. When I was growing up, there was a theater called the Granada in Dallas, and it was a repertory theater. They would bring in prints of old movies. They'd do these amazing double features, like they'd do a double feature, like an Ingrid Bergman double feature, and they'd show Notorious and Casablanca the same night. You know what I mean? It was that kind of
thing. Oh, I do. No, this is that pre or early VHS world, so a lot of the revival theaters in big metropolitan areas were still happening.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. I remember seeing High Noon for the first time on a big screen.
Yeah,
and it was, it was like the greatest – high school entertainment slash education I could get watching movies that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, to see stuff on, I mean, it was a big deal. Seeing stuff like that on the big screen was amazing. And then I was an undergrad at Yale. And when I was at Yale, again, this is a million years ago, and there were like 7 or 8 film societies, student-run film societies that would rent these 16-millimeter prints of classic movies and show them in like dining halls and stuff and for like $2, you know? So I would literally, I mean, some weekends I'd literally watch 6 movies. I mean, I just watched so many classic movies over the course of those years. It was tremendous. And I got to see most of them on the big screen.
I'm trying to remember who directed Heidi.
Fred Zinnemann.
Nice. Yes. Okay. Cause yes, I mean, obviously the Gary Cooper and Grace Kelly, a young Lloyd Bridges.
Yes, a very young Lee Van Cleef.
Yes.
Who I love so much. He's in there too. Yeah, tremendous movie. So that was one of the first movies that blew my mind. I mean, as I grew, I mean, first Westerns. I watched a lot of those Anthony Mann Westerns as well with Jimmy Stewart. Loved like Naked Spur.
Naked Spur. Gabe Hartman brought that up the other day when everyone's hashtagging their seven favorite.
Yeah, exactly. Magnificence. I mean, Seven Samurai is probably my favorite movie of all time. And Magnificent Seven, I was very dubious of it at first because I was being a snob. It's like, it's just
completely understand. But
I love it. I mean, like it's a tremendous movie. It's like the best remake ever.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, really for people who like, you know, I get it, especially, and I'm glad you laid it out that way. Of course, Kurosawa is the amazing original, but. You know, John Sturges, really, really good director.
And
Magnificent Seven has its own charm. I am really interested in this remake that's coming up because I'm incredibly dubious about that.
Oh, really?
Frank.
Well,
even though it has this amazing cast.
Yeah, well, I'm obviously going to see it because of that cast. I mean, they've got a Korean actor in there, they've got Denzel Washington. True. I mean, they're doing interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's a multiracial Magnificent Seven.
So that should be cool. So, I mean, Magnificent Seven, I mean, like the original was, I mean, like the Mexican-American character was a huge, you know, I mean, like he basically played the Toshiro Mifune character. This is another reason why I've loved Westerns over the years, too, is that they, the great Westerns, so many of the great Westerns really grapple with questions of race in America in a very interesting way. You know what I mean? And yes, there's plenty of racist Westerns and there's plenty of racist elements and even great Westerns. But at the same time, Westerns actually confront the idea of racism sometimes.
Absolutely.
You know, the good
Absolutely.
Ones. I mean, The Searchers, and I've got such mixed feelings about it in a lot of ways because but at the same time, it doesn't shy away from the fact that the hero of that movie is a big fat racist. And they really grapple with that in an interesting, you know,
absolutely.
At the same time, like, the movie itself does things which are inadvertently that are racist. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's very complicated,
Well, he busts, Captain Pike, the actor, Jeffrey Hunter.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Hunter is half white, half Indian.
Exactly.
And he is merciless to him
throughout
the movie while he's searching for his niece who was taken from the Indians and stuff.
And then
I'm reading Scott Eyman's John Wayne biography right now, and I don't agree with John Wayne in any way politically. but that said, he's a fascinating man, and The Searchers, it's an incredible film.
Yeah.
I mean, visually and story and just every aspect of it is just this incredibly fascinating.
I mean, the part of it that leaves the most the worst taste in my mouth. There's a whole sequence in there where the Jeffrey Hunter character sort of accidentally gains an Indian wife, and the way character is not treated well at all by the movie.
Like you said, it's in because of the times. It's inadvertently insensitive in a lot of ways that were unintended.
I wouldn't even call that inadvertently, but it's at the same time, like the movie is, I mean, I find that movie and many other Westerns very interesting because while they've got really specious stuff in them, they're at the same time trying to grapple with these real questions of racial conflict and racism in America, in a way, a lot of other, you know, just kind of escapist genres don't necessarily do. So, I mean, and this is, I'm talking about, you know, good Westerns, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, this was that period in the 50s, and really even High Noon has that, you know, Quaker, do I kill or not kill question.
I mean, they've all got, you know, so and then one of the other westerns that I just loved when I was a kid, when I first saw it, it blew my mind, was Little Big Man.
Nice.
With Dustin Hoffman. And Chief Dan George. And,
yes, the 100-year-old Indian talking about.
No, wait a minute. Yeah. That is Chief Dan George, right? Yes.
I think so. Yeah. I focus more on Dusty, but yeah, I mean, you know, I'm pretty sure that's
Chief Dan George.
I'm going to look it up to make sure, but you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah. I mean, that movie, again, you know, really, I mean, that's the one that really grapples with
racism.
Exactly.
Oh, totally. And yeah, the way they depict Custer and.
Yes. Yeah.
But again, a 70s movie, very edgy, but much like good sci-fi, using a Western to tell a very complicated human story. And that's, the genre stuff at its best, tell very human stories.
And so there's been a million Westerns over the years that I've, I mean, those Jimmy Stewart Westerns with Anthony Mann are tremendous. Yeah. And all, you know, and then there are other just kind of, I mean, Stagecoach is great, you know.
Sure.
I mean,
I don't even mind the 60s one with Anne Margaret and Bing
Crosby. No, I haven't seen that one. But these movies have always stuck with me. But it's funny because when we're talking about Kingsway West, the Westerns absolutely, you know, stuck with me. And that's the whole idea of taking these kinds of stories, but telling it from the perspective of a Chinese guy in the Old West, Chinese gunslinger. Sure. That's just an idea that's been with me forever. I mean, I'm Korean American. I grew up in Texas. And when I found out about the real history of Chinese in the Old West, my head opened up, you know, and it was just amazing, you know, like, and so I've had this story in my head for a couple of decades now, or this character in my head, I'll put it that way, because the story has shifted in different ways over the years. But then the other stuff, like the other stuff that has influenced me a lot as I've thought about this is fantasy, you know, like Lord of the Rings and all those.
Sure.
You know, and I realized that the Westerns and the fantasy stuff that I love so much, there's a lot of similarities, you know. It's outdoor adventure. It's stories of, you know, lawless places, frontier places.
Fiefdoms. Someone could run a Western town in the same way that a fantasy character can run a kingdom,
And conflicts between conflicts between indigenous groups and groups that have, you know, and
totally.
Newcomers and you know, I mean, there's just and also that whole notion of pulling together a group, you know, or, you know, of disparate people coming together on some kind of and some kind of a mission or some kind of a
suicide squad.
But you know,
not to leave a bad taste in anyone's mouth. Go on.
There's that, you know, that whole attraction of D&D back in the day. I think a big
was
this thing of like putting your crew together, you know, and I think that's certainly a big part of the appeal of Seven Samurai and Magnificent Seven and movies like that. I mean, Kingsway West has some of, you know, it definitely has some of that as well. It's like, you know, people being pulled together on a mission but yeah, so you know, all these things have kind of been rolling around in my head for years and years and years, and finally the story has come together in the right way. So hopefully folks dig it.
Are you a steampunk fan? I mean, obviously you're writing this, but did you ever think beyond before starting this story? Like you said, you obviously have, because you said you've had this story kind of brewing. But did you think of it as a steampunk?
No,
story?
I didn't actually think of it. You know, I mean, I totally see that, particularly given the last image in this particular issue, which we won't reveal in detail. But but yeah, there's definitely some elements of that here. That's not. I didn't actually set out to. Do a steampunk kind of thing. I really started with the idea of magic and fantasy, but then we've got, you know, basically, without getting too deep into spoilers here, you've got folks using this red gold, which is the source of magic in machinery, you know, like using it to power technology. And so that kind of leads to this sort of 19th century, you know, crazy machinery. So yeah, I mean, I with that, you know, I didn't, like, that wasn't purposeful, but it was just where the story went. So it makes sense that, to hear that, even though, it's not the way I've been describing or thinking about it, but it totally makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think, and again, I think that's cool. That only opens up more possibilities, you know, from a story standpoint too.
Yep.
So no, I am. I'm a sucker for these kinds of stories. And also, like you said, I mean, it's a chance to play in the Western genre and get more different people involved in it and different races and creeds involved that would be plausible given the geography of it. And I think that's kind of cool. I think there's a good opportunity there. Cause I just saw a steampunk documentary, and they talked a lot about English colonialism, you know, as far as the realities of it. And then yet there were these various people of color playing with steampunk stories and saying, you know, like they just kind of even just said from an, you know, just for their own standpoint, how they were a little conflicted about doing it, but ultimately they like telling these stories, and they find a way of, you know, work from a political standpoint that people of color aren't just natives and they're not just, you know, workers and stuff like that, you know, that they have their own stories in it and can be heroes as well and villains. And again, just kind of open things up kind of in the way I think Alan Moore did with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, frankly.
Yeah. It's, you know, like the in every era, in every culture, and every era in history, things, I mean, diversity has been the standard, you know what I mean? We don't necessarily see it that way, but it's, you know, I mean, the stories that we tend to get tend to overlook that, but there's always been massive diversity everywhere, particularly in America. So yeah, I mean, I think these stories make a lot of sense, and it's fun to be able to do it and get it out there.
That's awesome, man. No, very cool. Are you five issue arcs? What are you looking at?
Well, this is actually, this is a 4-issue mini right now.
Okay.
And if it does well, and knock on wood, it seems to be doing well so far. If it does well enough, we'll hopefully get a sequel going and just keep doing keep it going. This world has been so fun to set up, and these characters are so much fun to write. I'm really hoping we can do more than just these 4 issues. We've got a hell of a story lined up with the 4 issues. I've written them all, and the first 2 are completely drawn, and we're it's going to be a very satisfying 4-issue story, I think, but man, there's room to do so much more. So if you dig it, I hope you spread the word, and whoever's listening, I hope you check it out, and if everybody buys enough, we'll be able to keep going.
Did you run a Kickstarter or whatever for this last year, or was there like, or was it supposed to maybe come out last year and Dark Horse pushed it further on the schedule?
Well, yes, it was supposed to come out in November of last year.
That's what I thought. Go on.
Yeah, and Miracle actually injured his arm, and so we were delayed there. And then, and then I found myself, just because I had the time, I started looking at that first issue again. And I started picking at it, and I realized I wasn't setting things up as well as I could. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I had rushed some scenes and rushed some, and there was, I felt like I could have done better in writing that first issue. So we took the time and I rewrote and then we got back on track and got it all together. And I'm so glad we did it. I mean, it was a really hard thing to do, and I'm just incredibly grateful to the folks at Dark Horse for putting up with it because it threw off the schedule, and it's you don't want to do that once you've announced something, but we wanted to put our best foot forward, and of as we've been, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, is like that first issue really wants to be everything it can be, and I wanted to take a little more time and get into my main character's head a little bit better from the beginning, and set up the world in a little bit more of a interesting way. And knock on wood, I think we did it. And then eventually, when we come up with the trade, we'll have some kind of cool alternate material to show, so folks can kind of see how it was originally supposed to open and decide for themselves if we did the right thing.
Now, what is Kingsway's partner's name? Not his wife, obviously,
right.
But the other Chinese.
So the woman who comes to get him, her name is Atoy, which is actually a name from actual American history. There was a kind of a famous Chinese woman in the Old West named Atoy. So I kind of cribbed that little homage there. But yeah, so she's we don't reveal exactly why she's come, but she's got a mission for him. We'll learn a lot more about it in the next issue.
And possesses a little bit of the red gold in that,
yes.
And kind of can show that she has some sort of command over this small piece of red gold that allows her a bit of magic with her sword and her powers.
Exactly.
They meet in the wilderness, or well, not wilderness. I don't know what you would call. I guess the desert. Yeah. I guess the Western desert and everything. And yeah, it's your classic kind of Anthony Mann, or like I said, John Ford kind of, you know, the two, you know, again, she's kind of searching for him and stuff. But yeah, you know, that they kind of meet in that usual classic Western.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the classic thing of the old gunslinger who's just trying to live in peace. And then some young crazy person comes and wants to drag them back into this, you know, into this world of conflict. And he doesn't want to go. But now his wife has disappeared. And so he's got to find her.
Outside of, like, you know, and again, I'm thinking old-fashioned classic Westerns, where it's rare when a woman really gets to play this kind of role. That does make it distinct, and obviously that's in your mind, as opposed to if it were Robert Mitchum looking for John Wayne or whatever. You know, now we got maybe Angie Dickinson from Rio Bravo looking for John right. Wayne or something. Yeah. If Feathers had a gun.
Yeah, I mean there've been a few classic examples, I guess, with women playing those kinds of key roles. Well, I mean, True Grit is probably the.
Yeah, and I was thinking about True Grit, but she's really a kid, maybe Autoy is as well. But I mean, that's the thing. Like, yeah, she's a kid, or, you know, you got Rooster Cogburn and you got Katharine Hepburn. I need your help, you know. And it's like, all right, fine, old lady, hold on a minute, I'll help you. Or what's her, Lauren Bacall in The Shooters, for God's sake.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I mean, I, you know, like, we in all of these, with all of these opportunities, I'm, you know, I'm jumping on the chance to do things and kind of, a, you know, to shake things up a bit and to,
sure.
to but you know, it's funny. I didn't really think about it. I didn't really think about it. It was just like, this was the way the story kind of came together in my head. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't necessarily like, I'm going to do
the right thing, and I'm going to make sure this is as balanced racially and sexually. And
I mean, there's, you know, I do, you know, I definitely do think about those things. You know, it's very important to me, but at the same time, it's organic. You know what I mean? Like, this story came together the way it came together. I think, you know, just thematically, for whatever reason, that's the way the characters always wanted to be in my head.
Cool.
And, you know, so it seems, you know, so far, knock on wood, so far it seems to be working. So I hope.
Hey, man. No, I like it. I'm not, you know, I'm not the knuckle dragger I may sound like, but no, honestly. And I do think it makes it different.
Yeah.
Just in the same way that, like, you know, with Greg Rucka doing Stumptown, and, you know, you've got a female detective, you know, pretty much doing a Rockford sort of detective spin, but it's a woman, so it is different.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there's like a, there are, yeah, there's nuances that can come to play, and just different ways things can get expressed when you mix things up, and that's, you know, I think that's always fun.
That's cool.
So, but yeah.
Excellent. Hey, you know, I got to tell you, and I'm also for listeners, I really, and shame on me, and maybe it has actually just improved in the last few years, but I am watching more Encore Western than I ever have. And I don't know, and again, probably because I'm reading this John Wayne biography, but God, it's just a pleasure. I mean, because that's the thing, like you said, big Anthony Mann fan, big Jimmy Stewart Western fan, Winchester 73, Naked Spur, you name it. But now I'm even finding, like, you know, Dean Martin made a lot of Westerns. I'm going to start checking more of them out beyond Rio Bravo.
Oh.
And you know, there's good ones and not so much good ones, but they're really interesting, even the crappy ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm a sucker for genre in general, you know what I mean? Like, just movies that, you know, genre movies, I think I always find them interesting, even if they're terrible sometimes, just because of, to see how they're playing with those genre elements and where they're going and what they're doing, you know what I mean?
So, yeah.
And you know, the Western genre, folks have done so many different kinds. There have been musicals. There have been Western musicals. There have been...
Paint Your Wagon.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, like folks, you can do anything with it. And
absolutely. Cat Ballou is a better example.
Yeah.
Paint Your Wagon. Yeah. No, you're right. And I mean, you know what's funny? Because we're really still... I mean, I guess we're 15 years in to the modern comic book movie era, or maybe even really Iron Man, because I think the Sam Raimi Spider-Man is very different from what, you know, has been happening since Marvel has really taken over their own movies. And it's so funny because people are like, you know, we might be done. You know, I mean, look how Westerns went away. And I'm like, yeah, Westerns went away literally after 70 years.
Yeah.
So just relax. I mean, that's the thing, because they said so much from the silent era to 1980. And in the meantime, in the late 50s and early 60s, there were almost like 100 Westerns on primetime TV. Every network had dozens of Westerns. It was crazy.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because, I mean, and this is just something I've only thought about recently, but like Westerns haven't really gone away. I mean, like the themes of Westerns, like the you know, the one of the big constant themes in Westerns is this notion of a lawless environment where a person who is trained in violence, like the community needs somebody who's trained in violence to come and use violence in order to protect the community. But once peace has been made, then there's no room in the community for that violent person. You know what I mean? Like that's the that's Shane. You know what I mean? Like that's the classic,
yes.
That's the classic Western. But those themes have played out in police shows, in gangster movies. You know what I mean? Like that whole, you know, John McClane that's a character that was born in Westerns. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
And literally, you know, what's his, Alan Rickman is calling him Roy Rogers
Exactly. You know? Yeah, exactly. Yippee-ki-yay. You're totally right. I mean, so like those kinds of elements have just moved into different genres, but working on
Sean Connery as Zardoz.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but you know, in working on Kingsway West, that's exactly, I mean, I really kind of saw that because, you know, like I thought I was doing something really special when Jim Gibbons, my editor at Dark Horse, when I first started on the book, was like, I love this story. Is there something more we can bring to it to make it pop a little more? And I, you know, and I thought about it and I was like, well, what if we bring in these fantasy elements? What if we make, you know, bring in this magical world? And he was like, I love it. And the more I thought about it, the more it made sense to me because, you know, like I looked at all these fantasy movies that I love so much and stories, you know, the Lord of the Rings and the Lloyd Alexander books and the Miyazaki movies. And those are all outdoor adventure. You know what I mean? They're very similar to Westerns. You got people riding horses or antelopes as the case may be. And you've got these kind of, you know, these loner figures. I mean, Aragorn in Lord of the Rings is, I mean, he's a classic gunslinger. You know what I mean?
I understand.
And so there are, I mean, there's a way in which those Western elements just kind of shifted into different genres. But they're always, you know, I don't know. I mean, there've been people talk about this in all kinds of different ways. The people talk about the fact that the United States has become so much more urban, you know, Texas, which is sort of the most quintessentially Western of all the states, speaking as a Texan, you know, in the imagination of the public, is actually more urban than rural now. You know,
I didn't realize that.
You know, I mean, that's just a trend. That's been an ongoing trend in the United States for years. And so fewer and fewer people have that kind of classic outdoor American childhood that you know, you would kind of think would engender a love of Westerns. You know what I mean? Fewer people have spent a night out under the stars like a Western hero. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, so there's less of that kind of real direct connection to those experiences. At the same time, people are totally in love with Lord of the Rings and these other kinds of movies. It's like, I don't think that the Westerns as a genre is at all dead. In fact, they talk about the fact that I heard this, I don't know if this is true, but somebody told me that Western books that's one of the few genres in publishing that's growing.
That's great to hear.
Which is interesting. You know, I somebody told me that. I don't know if that's actually, here I am spreading a rumor. I don't even know if it's true.
Well, I remember, and it's one of my favorite stories of the last 10 years, but a bunch of the old First Comics creators being together on a panel. And Tim Truman wasn't there, but they were talking about him. And this was in the early 2000s. And Tim was trying to get one of the big publishers to do a Western comic that he drew and wrote.
Oh, yeah.
And there was no interest. And he self-published and advertised in cowboy magazines and ended up self-publishing. And this is well before, you know, the current trend and everything, right, and made good money. And because he went directly to that reading Western audience, and they're like, yes, we would love to read your illustrated Western. That sounds lovely, yeah, sir. Yeah. You know, and I mean, that's how he presented it, as, you know, a graphic novel, but like an illustrated Western. Yeah. And they loved it. Yeah. And then, yeah, well, sure, because Tim knows what he's doing. I mean, he knows how to draw and write a good Western. Yeah. So that's fantastic.
I mean, it's like anything, you know, like Hollywood likes to get scared of things and likes to embrace things. And there will be a point when Hollywood embraces Westerns again, once there's a couple hits.
Well, they're coming out. I mean, and they're doing, God, did you see Bone Tomahawk?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen that.
Russell, amazing movie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but yeah, so we've just in the last year, we've had Bone Tomahawk and Hateful Eight, you know.
Hateful Eight, yeah, and we're going to get Magnificent Seven. Do you know, all right, here's a guilty pleasure, and it's a TV movie, and it is crap, but it's totally the Star Wars story as a Western, and it's called Legend of the Golden Gun.
Oh, no, I've never heard of it.
And Hal Holbrook plays an old gunslinger that teaches this young kid. And it's real. I mean, he is like the only name, I think, in this TV movie. But he plays like the Obi-Wan role. And there's a golden gun that's basically like a lightsaber and stuff. And there's a little bit of kind of intuition that can be, you know, disguised as the Force in a pure Star Wars movie. But yeah, clearly, you know, the TV movie. And I even remember the ads for it as a kid. And then basically winking and going, it's a story you might be familiar with.
That's hilarious.
You know, and it really did. Like, all the broad strokes are clearly the Star Wars, you know, the first movie.
That's really funny. Well,
and it's great.
I will have to check that out. I'm looking it up on IMDb even as we speak.
And it's cheese. I admit it. It is movie of the week, 70s cheese.
Hey, it's got Carl Franklin in it. That's a big
seller. Oh, shame on me. All right, there. Exactly.
Wow. This is pretty interesting. All right. I'll check
it. See? And I mean, it's one of, and it used to be on like when at conventions, when they'd have the bootleg VHS section or DVD section, you can usually find it there and stuff. But I don't know. Is it on DVD?
I don't know. I can't.
Do IMDb?
Yeah. I'm checking it out here. It's only got a 5.8 on IMDb, but you know what?
There you go. Oh no, like I said, it's cheese, yeah. But if it's fun, if you watch it from that point of view, yeah, that you're watching a Western Star Wars, it's kind of fun.
It's listed under the genres fantasy and Western, much like Kingsway West. So maybe I'll have to check it out.
There you go. Very cool, man. No, that's great. And when does it come out next
week? Yeah, well, no, it comes out on August 24th.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, okay,
it's
good.
Just around the corner here. I don't know whether it's going to be around the corner by the time this airs. Maybe it will.
Oh, no. Well, I'll make sure that it gets on before next Wednesday.
Oh, fantastic. That's great. Yeah. So it comes out on August 24th. I'm doing a little signing tour on the East Coast. I'm going to be at Fourth World Comics in Long Island on the 24th, and then Midtown Comics downtown in New York City on the 25th. And then on the 27th and 28th, I'm going to I'm going to Wilmington and Philadelphia and DC and Annapolis.
Oh wow, yeah,
you can get the full sked at gregpock.com.
Excellent. I'm surprised Franco and Mark haven't hit you up for All Yeah Comics in Harrison.
Oh yeah, I did sign for them a while back, but hopefully I'll get back up there soon.
Okay, good. Yeah, but maybe for the trade or whatever.
Yeah.
So excellent. No, that's great, man. Congratulations, and I think it's terrific.
Well, thank you.
So now let's talk about the Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yeah,
man. Shit's going down.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Aw, you know, you give us a moment of happiness, and Bruce has the gamma out of his system, and then badass Hawkeye's got to kill him. What the hell's going on, man?
That's Event Comics, baby. So the latest news, spoiler alert, in the pages of Civil War II, Bruce Banner has been killed. Hawkeye thought, oh, well, I won't go into all the details, but he was suspected there was a prophecy that he was going to kill everybody, and they thought he was turning back into the Hulk and that this thing might start up again, and Hawkeye took him out. So in the pages of Totally Awesome Hulk, which is the book I'm writing, Amadeus Cho, who is the new Hulk and who cured Bruce Banner of being the Hulk, is not happy at all about this.
Needless to say.
Yes, exactly. So, in issue number 9, which just came out, he Captain Marvel comes to check up on him.
Hey buddy, how you doing? Sorry, we killed your best friend.
Right, she's
your mentor.
She's backed up by a bunch of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and superheroes, and he's not happy to see her. And but basically, he goes on the run, and they're scared that he's going to go hunt down Clint Barton, Hawkeye, and they have no idea what he's going to do. He's, you know, he's 19 years old. He's
Where is he on the smartest person in the Marvel Universe chart? Because I know he has a number.
I think he just got bumped down to 9, actually. Because yes, because Lunella has taken the number one spot. So, but yeah, that's a storyline that I love this kind of stuff. It's always
Please, man! It's like Mr. Terrific in the DC Universe is the third smartest man in the DC Universe, right behind Lex Luthor and Bruce Wayne.
Yes, but yeah, in Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, there's a great storyline right now where Lunella Lafayette, who is the heroine of that story, has been revealed as the smartest person in the Marvel Universe. But meanwhile, so Amadeus is, you know, he's 19, he's dealing with the death of his best friend, and he doesn't know what the heck he's going to do. But folks, you know, they think he's tracking down Clint Barton. And so the big twist at the end of the cliffhanger at the end of issue 9 is the reveal that T'Challa, the Black Panther, is the guy who's going to follow Amadeus and track him down. So it's
that should be an interesting combination. Exactly. Yeah, this is going to be fun having a different Hulk meet a lot of these and come up against a lot of these heroes.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, it's a ton of fun. Also because this is a Hulk who, you know, this is a kid who is in control of his transformations and who remains smart, or you know, as smart as he allows himself to be when he's the Hulk. You know, based on whether or not he's controlling himself. You know, like his this isn't a dumb Hulk. This is Amadeus as the Hulk, and so. He becomes a more formidable threat, but it's very, you know, T'Challa is one of the few people in the Marvel Universe who's smart enough to take on Amadeus as Amadeus, and who has the know-how to marshal the kind of hardware and software you need to take on the Hulk. So it's going to be a fun showdown. I've been talking some with Ta-Nehisi Coates about it, and he's been great and really supportive, and it's a fun story. So I hope you.
So it will bleed into his book as well.
No. It won't. And it's not a crossover story, but
okay.
But, you know, I just wanted to make sure I'm, you know, I'm.
Yeah, you're consistent with the way he's writing.
Exactly.
And everything.
Exactly.
I'm hip. Yeah. No, that's cool. And also, of course, Jennifer's in your book as well.
Yeah.
She.
Yeah. Yeah. She will show up in the Fallen book, which actually comes out tomorrow. So by the time this podcast comes out, it will have come out the previous Wednesday. So that comes out on the 17th. The Fallen is it's a big oversized book. I think it's 30 pages, and it's about how everybody in the Marvel Universe reacts to the death of Bruce Banner, with particular emphasis on the Hulk family. So if you want to find out more about what's going on with Jen, that's what you need to check that out for sure.
And did you write that story?
Yes.
Or did you?
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I was thrilled. They called me up and they're like, well, you know, so, I mean, I love Banner. You know what I mean? Like I wrote.
I know that you're one of the best Hulk writers ever, dude. Absolutely, man.
I appreciate that. But
I swear to God, one of my best friends, I was talking to him on the phone right before I was trying to boot up my laptop. He's like, who are you talking to tonight? I'm like, Rick Pock. He's like, I love Planet Hulk. And I'm like, I know, man.
I wrote Banner stories or Banner related stories for 5.5 years, I think, at Marvel. And so it was very, I was really thrilled that I got the tap to write that book and put a lot of heart into it. I hope it resonates. It's got one of the favorite scenes I've ever written with Banner in it. So I hope you guys get a kick out of it.
Honestly, I think because there's the part, and I understand because I'm, you know, old enough that I've been reading these books for so long. I know everyone rolls their eyes when they kill characters, and all I can say is, instead of like rolling your eyes, give you guys, the writers and the artists, the opportunity to tell some really special stories. Because I look back at when Hickman had the opportunity to, you know, have Johnny Storm die.
Right.
And yeah, we all knew in the back of our heads, okay, Johnny's eventually going to come back. That's fine. But he wrote some really, really touching stories in Fantastic Four. And I'm glad you're getting this opportunity with reactions to Banner's death. I mean, we got it with the death of Captain America. And again, you got to treat it like a soap opera and say, okay, you know, for maybe a few years, I mean, Professor X is still dead. You know, you know, I mean, there are guys and women that are dead. And again, it's like, give these heroes, respect their reality. Because as far as they know, these people are dead and aren't ever coming back.
Yeah, you know, I mean, everything, for all of us who have read comics, you know that everything is subject to change. And
sure.
But, you know, and at the same time, there's this kind of sense of, you know, I totally understand, you know, for readers who, you know, they want stories that matter, you know, in terms of the shared universe and everything. You know, for me personally, as I read these stories, it's like I just want to be moved. You know what I mean? Like I want to feel something, and as a writer, I definitely work within continuity and I strive to make that continuity work, and I understand the importance of it. As a reader, I just want to be moved. You know what I mean? Like I just so I hope that the stories work on that emotional level. You know, so that's just what I'm trying to do.
I hear you, man. No, as much as you could look forward to a funeral, I'll be reading The Fallen. That's terrific, and I'm glad to hear that. And I just, like I said, I just think there's an opportunity for great storytelling, and you can be jaded and be like, no, I don't care. It's going to come back in 6 months. Well, fine, you know, that's your choice, but you might actually miss a very interesting emotional story moment that resonates. And yeah, I think the opportunity is there.
Well, thank you. And I hope you enjoy it.
Excellent. Very, very cool. What else is on your plate these days? We should go back to, all right. So there's everybody knows how to spell poop.
Oh yeah. Right.
Was your one kid right. book. What was it called again?
It's called ABC Disgusting. And it's
ABC Disgusting.
An alphabet book about disgusting things. So yes.
And that was a successful Kickstarter,
yeah,
right?
It was a lot of fun. And Tak Miyazawa drew it. Tak also drew,
yes,
The Princess Who Saved Herself, which was the other kid's book that I did earlier based on John.
Yes, Holden. That's the one where I was saying that, the princess that knows how to spell.
Yeah, exactly. both of those books were a total blast. And if you want them, go to Greg Pak Shop, GREGPAKSHOP. You can buy them up there. I've been selling them at cons, and they kind of sell themselves. It's sort of awesome, you know, like folks will just walk up and, you know, they'll see a kid picking his nose on the cover of one. They'll see a princess rocking out on electric, a tomboy princess rocking out on an electric guitar on the other. And they're like, let me see what these are all about.
That's cool. And are you self-publishing or did you cut book deals with?
Those are both self-published. They're both out under Pac-Man Productions, which is my little company. But we may have something to announce at some point in the near future regarding.
Attaboy. There you go.
That's as much as I can say about that right now.
No, I'm proud of you for diversifying. Oh, yeah. I think that's great. And I am pleased that a lot of you guys are having success in both the young adult and children's books as well. I think that's really great.
Oh yeah. It's you know, I mean, it makes sense. You know, we're thinking about these comic book stories and, you know, and storytelling through pictures, and you know, there's a lot of synergy between, you know, doing kids picture books and comics, I think, or I don't know if synergy is the right word, but it made sense to me to move from one to the other. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, I think, again, yeah, I think kids like adventure stories, and they may not like comics, but again, a good writer, that's terrific. Yeah. You know, write a novel.
Exactly.
Why don't
I know. Well, I'm thinking about it, or I'm working on it. But
excellent.
But then the other thing I got going on is I'm doing a book for Boom. It is...
Tell me about your Boom book.
Yes, they called me up, my friends at Boom, and actually they sent me an email, and I couldn't say no, because they said, how would you like to do a book that's a team-up book between the Kurt Russell characters from Big Trouble in Little China and Escape from New York?
I didn't realize you were writing this. That's fantastic. Yeah. I've heard about this project. Go on.
So it's called Big Trouble in Little China / Escape from New York. That's the name of the book. And it's the kind of big talking lunkhead truck driver character, Jack Burton.
Jack Russell?
Jack Burton. Jack Burton.
Jack Burton, yes, that's right.
From
Jack Russell, of course, Werewolf by
yes,
Night. Go
exactly.
On.
From Big Trouble in Little China, meets up with deadly war hero turned criminal Snake Plissken from his
monosyllabic Snake Plissken.
Exactly, one-eyed snake. And and it's just, it's a total blast. You know what I mean? It's just so much fun. I'm just, it's ridiculously fun. So
two amazingly great stories, the Carpenter stories.
Yeah. And I got to talk with John Carpenter, you know.
Really?
Yes.
Is he vetting like your story and everything?
So they sent over the outline, you know, and all that. And he just, the report I got back was that he loves it. He thinks it's a great idea for a comic. And so I got to talk to him, and he basically just said, go for it, you know, have fun.
That's great.
And then I got to pick his brain a little bit about Snake, you know, and Snake and...
Well, yeah, where else do you go? I mean, you've got the two movies, and that's it. And got it, in Jack Burton's case, you got the one movie.
Yeah. So it's been, it's a total kick. And those characters are, I mean, it's that kind of ridiculous idea, which is just ridiculously fun. And then once you start to dig into it a little bit, it gets really emotionally fun. I mean, it's deep, you know what I mean? Because those two characters are, I mean, they're kind of similar in a lot of ways, but then they come at things from a very different angle, and
totally.
And they provide just, I mean, you put them in a room together and they're just, they give you so much. So it's just been a huge amount of fun. So,
well, there's got to be some sort of time travel.
Yes, well, the premise is that, without spoiling too much, but the premise is that Jack Burton, while trucking down the street, trucking down the highway, gets transported to Snake Plissken's world, and it's a post disaster hellhole where armored marauders fight each other on the broken highways of America. And Jack's in the middle of all. He's a trucker, so you know he can drive. Whether or not he can survive remains to be seen. But of course, as soon as he gets there, people mistake him for Snake Plissken. So
hilarity ensues.
Yes, exactly.
And is Adrian Barbeau, Ernest Borgnine, or Isaac Hayes in the story?
I can't reveal yet. But there will be other characters from the movies in the story, definitely, along with some new characters that we're creating who are a lot of fun.
Excellent. All right, that's cool. When does that start? Because I know I've been hearing about it. Has it already started?
I don't know. Well, I've turned in two scripts so far. The first one's being drawn by the great Daniel Bayliss, who's awesome.
And did they just announce it in right before San Diego or whatever?
Yeah, it was fairly recent. Yeah, I think they announced. Yeah, exactly. I think they announced it just before San Diego. It will. I think the first issue comes out in October. I'm not positive.
Okay.
But it's
how many issues?
Six.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. So it's fun. It's fun. Yeah, I've written two. I'm about halfway through the third. And it's like butter. It's just, you know, like sometimes, you know, sometimes the scripts are hard. Sometimes they come pretty easily. These are flowing pretty nicely. The folks at Boom are just a total, I mean, they're so much fun, and they've been giving me great notes and great suggestions. And we're laughing a lot in these emails just because the whole thing's so ridiculous. But,
God, I remember when CrossGen had the license for 2 seconds.
Oh.
And in fact, one of my favorite original art sketches that I have framed, Tone Rodriguez did a Snake Plissken profile for me. And it's great because I, you know, like friends that aren't into comics will come over and they don't recognize half the heroes on my wall. But then they'll look over and go, is that Snake Plissken? Yes, it is.
I thought he was dead.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah, it's fun.
How many times is that in your miniseries? Exactly?
It's actually, I haven't used it yet. I don't think I've done that yet. I it'll make its way in there eventually. But
that's awesome.
So, but yeah, so you know, I'm.
That's cool, man. No, and I know they've had the license for a while, and I know good writers have already written other Snake Plissken and also Escape from, or and also Big Trouble in Little China, the comics and stuff. So it's great that the team up is finally happening.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's funny sometimes, like you just can't say no.
I understand.
No, so I'm thrilled to be working on
That's really cool. Are there other Kurt Russell performances that you can pull from?
Oh, you know, I wish, because, but I don't think rights wise we can do it. You know?
Well, but even just in your head, as far as thematic, I mean, you know, just in, because, I mean, there's been different shades, obviously, in each role, but, you know, he really has kind of carved a almost John Wayne sort of like persona that you can kind of find some consistency through some, a lot of his movies.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think in you know, he definitely was homaging John Wayne in
Big Trouble. Hell, he's doing the voice.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's pretty awesome.
I love that. Yeah, both of those movies, man. Escape from L.A. is fun, but, you know, New York, just because it was made with no tongue in cheek, beyond the, like, I'm sure Carpenter was having fun with it. But you know what I mean? It was played a little more.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's
versus half action movie, half comedy, the way L.A.
Yeah,
was.
Yeah, Escape from L.A. definitely is more winky. But oh yeah, so he's basically channeling. I realize this. He's basically channeling Wayne for Big Trouble and Clint Eastwood for Escape, which I think is awesome.
You're right.
What's that?
That's interesting. I never really did put the Eastwood thing on Snake, but you're 100% right. That's really interesting.
Call me Snake.
You know, boy, it's too bad because now I'm thinking of even more Carpenter and stuff, and you got to like work in a They Live kind of vibe or something like that. I love that movie.
Oh, man. Yeah, Carpenter's, I mean, he's got a tremendous, tremendous
body.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's funny because this whole Seven Fave Films thing has been floating around on Twitter the last week or so. And
yes.
And I just noticed that there are a bunch of comics people who keep listing The Thing, Carpenter's The Thing on their thing.
Which,
wow. I didn't actually put that on mine, but I'd love that movie. You know what I mean? And
we got to bring up our list so people can share and stuff. So while we're talking, I'm going to look up my list and I want you to do the same. Oh, but go on.
Yeah, I think I had, I had a serious one. A joke one. My joke one was Seven Samurai and Seven Brides for Seven.
Well, sure, all the seven.
Yeah, exactly.
Movies,
right. So, but I think on my real
seven.
On my real one, I had I had Seven Samurai. I had Casablanca, Night at the Opera. What else did I have? Oh, I had Sunset Boulevard and Some Like It Hot.
Love them. Go on.
And then I had a tie. With Aliens, Jaws, and Blade Runner. I couldn't pick one.
That's hilarious. All right, I'm trying to find my two lists. Because then I also did seven TV shows today.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I also had Princess Mononoke on there.
Oh, nice. Very good. I've got my friends list. My buddy Donnie Lenza had The Godfather, High Noon, Raging Bull, Blazing Saddle, Shane, Champion, and True Grit.
Oh, wow. You look at you. You got two Westerns on there.
That was, that's my buddy's. Now,
okay, gotcha.
Yeah, that was my buddy's list. No, we're okay. So here we go. Now I did two lists because I don't care. There are no rules, and I have my first seven were North by Northwest, right. Diner, The In-Laws, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3
movie,
My Favorite Year, and Mr. Roberts.
Oh, My Favorite Year.
Love that movie.
Yeah, I think about that movie a lot actually. I love Peter O'Toole, that whole. There's a whole genre of like crazy person takes, you know, crazy older person takes younger person on crazy adventure. You know, like My Favorite Year, Zorba the Greek. There's at least a few others. Like
I got another one like that, and that's on my second list. I got The Apartment, The Last Hurrah, which is the John Ford, Spencer Tracy movie that I just adore.
That's the politics one, right?
I was going to say Machine Politics, where he's the mayor of basically Boston.
I should see that. I don't think I've ever seen that.
It's a great movie. I love it. It has it falls a little bit apart. The person who plays Spencer Tracy's son is kind of an odd fit in the movie, but that's okay. So let's see. Apartment, Last Hurrah, The Rat Pack, Ocean's 11, purely for the kitsch, but I love that movie. Oh. And also got to meet George Clayton Johnson, the wonderful genre writer who, among his things, he wrote the original story that became Ocean's 11.
Wow.
He wrote the first Star Trek episode that aired, The Man Trap.
Oh, wow.
And he wrote Kick the Can and A Game of Pool for Twilight Zone, and he co-wrote Logan's Run.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this guy was a rock star. And he passed away in 2015, and this year at San Diego, they had a nice memorial for him.
Oh, nice.
But I got to meet him a couple years ago, and I dragged Andy Parks with me. And I'm like, Andy, I know you don't know this guy, but just like with you, I'm like, let me give you his resume. And he's like, holy shit, I do want to meet this guy.
That's cool.
He's like, I like all of his stuff. I just didn't know who it was. So yeah, and he was great, and he was like in his like mid-80s or whatever, and totally weird kind of beatnik dude, like really was one of those beat generation guys that never really gave up the lifestyle and everything.
Awesome.
And couldn't have been nicer, and it was great. You know, me and Andy are there, and we're both in our late 40s, and we're like, yeah, Mr. Johnson, we're just really big fans. Like, oh, thanks, boys, that's very nice. We're like, boys, that's awesome. We're old, and he's calling us boys. So let's see. Last Hurrah, Apartment, Ocean's 11, Harvey.
Oh.
So there's your crazy person people on an adventure. The Great Escape, which another great John Sturges movie.
Yep.
Witness for the Prosecution.
Oh.
And The Verdict.
Nice.
The Met.
Yeah, that's a solid list. Solid list. What can I say?
I know you're a movie guy.
It's much easier for me to do the movies than the TV shows or any of the other stuff. You know, like I know movies better, I guess. It's been fun.
What's been going on in the movie world for you?
Stuff, but I can't say. I never talk about the movie stuff until it actually happens, just because that's the movie world. It's like, it just takes a lot longer.
No,
I don't talk about anything until it happens. But yeah, it's comics or if somebody's going to talk to you about a comics project, it is it's very likely that they are ready to do a project right now. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So your chances of actually doing something are much higher. In the movie business, you can do movie, you do meetings all the time, but there's not, but you're doing meetings with, you know, folks who are awesome and who are, you know, you're very happy to do those meetings, but they are folks are paid to do meetings, you know what I mean?
Like
it's not like the comics world where they are only going to talk to you if they have a project that they are going to do right now, you know what I mean? Like that, like the comics world, they don't have time to mess around. They don't have time to, you know, it's a little more nose to the grindstone. So but in the movie world, yeah, you can do a lot of meetings without anything happening for a long time. But I can't say anything, but I might have something to say in the not too distant future. So we'll see.
Well, here's hoping.
Yes.
You know, are you aware of a podcast, and I just discovered it in the last month, and I'm looking, yes, here it is. The Blacklist podcast. Do you know about this?
No, I know about The Blacklist, but I didn't know about the podcast.
Okay, it has nothing to do with What's-His-Face's TV show.
Okay.
And it has nothing to do with the Hollywood 10, the people that were declared communists and stuff. This is a podcast that they do dramatic table readings of, as they call it, some of Hollywood's best unmade screenplays.
I knew about those screenplays, but I didn't know there was a podcast for it, so that's cool.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, I didn't realize that was like nomenclature just for unmade movies. The Blacklist.
Well, yeah, folks have talked about that. I guess there every once in a while there's a movie that gets made off of that, and then people talk about it all over again. So yeah.
Oh wow. Okay. Because I just heard one that was a dramatization of Hitchcock in Hollywood in the very early talky 30s.
Oh wow.
And it you know, of course, has nods to, he meets people that, you know, are obvious ciphers for future characters in future Hitchcock movies.
Oh, right. Oh.
And it's cute. It was fun. And it was honestly well dramatized in terms of the cast and the sound effects and the music. And it's like, it was really good. So yeah, there's a recommendation. It's called The Blacklist Podcast. And they only produce like a handful of episodes each year.
Yeah, because that sounds like a really big undertaking.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, you know, there's another great one. Do you listen to You Must Remember This?
No.
That's a whole old Hollywood stories
cool.
podcast. And it's this woman who lives in England, and her name is Katrina Longworth. And she's an American woman. And I forget what magazine she's worked at in the past, but she's a tremendous narrator. They have great mood music, and it's one of those storytelling podcasts. And she's great. And I mean, honestly, they're just like, in fact, the actual communist Blacklist and stuff, she just finished a season of that and spent time on each writer and actor a number of actors and writers that were subject to the Blacklist.
That's cool.
And stuff.
What
did you see, Trumbo?
No, I did not.
That's great.
I missed a lot, I gotta say.
Well, I was gonna ask about superhero movies, but what were you about to say?
You know, that I was gonna say, what's the name of that second podcast you were talking about again?
You Must Remember This.
And I forgot immediately.
Exactly. So remember, so memorable, you've already forgotten it.
It's good.
But yeah, it's good. It's really cool. Actually, they just started a Joan Crawford miniseries for the summer, and it's fun, and it's really, I mean, God, it, like, you know, like the first episode really covered her from the silent, like, her early life through the silent era and the very early talkies of the 30s before she marries, I didn't know she married Douglas Fairbanks Jr., but apparently she did.
Oh, wow.
So pretty interesting stuff.
That is cool.
If you're a movie nut. So what superhero movies have you seen this year?
I haven't seen anything. It's ridiculous.
Really? No Deadpool? No Batman, Superman? No Suicide Squad? What the fuck, man?
I've been writing, man. I've been
busy. All right.
I've been busy. I've been just cranking out script, baby.
I understand. All good, man.
But
well, anything else you want to promote? Or
I know that's, you've covered it beautifully. I appreciate
it. It's always a pleasure, dude. No, oh, and you know, you were on recently, talking about your wasn't it your writing book?
Oh, the Kickstarter Secrets book. That's what we talked about. Yeah, that wasn't. So
much. Yeah, no, I do want to. I do want to ask more about that.
So I'm writing it, and it is. It's a book about all kinds of tips for doing Kickstarters. After I did all those Kickstarters for the children's books and everything else.
How many have you done so far?
I've done 4 now, including the Kickstarter Secrets book. And then I've been part of a couple of others. Not ones that I ran, but that I contributed to or helped out with in some way or another. The campaign for that went really well. We had something like 600 backers, which was amazing.
Fantastic.
We will deliver in October. That is the plan. So
that's fantastic. Excellent. Yeah. And now are your other, books, your kids' books and stuff, are they available as eBooks as well?
Yes. They're primarily available in print. But you can get those at gregpockshop.com.
Oh, and do you even sell the eBooks exclusively at Greg?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. No, I'm interested because, I keep hearing that as big of an impact that ebooks initially made, that the market is kind of softened. I also understand the value of selling hard books versus ebooks.
Yeah, well, for kids' books, I mean, the ebooks don't really sell. You know what I mean? It's really people buy the physical book. I think for kids' books in particular, that's what people want, you know, because people are buying it for gifts or to read to their kids. And I think people just enjoy having a physical book more than being off a tablet. I'm all good with that. I love sending out those books.
I hear you, man. No, that, man, that does make sense. Okay. Well, that's great, and glad to hear that the Kickstarter book is on schedule.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, yeah, but speaking about the ebook thing, the Kickstarter book is an ebook, you know, because it's a different.
I figured.
Because it's a different audience. Like that is that's a how-to book for a digital world kind of thing. You know what I mean? So it just made sense to do that as a digital book that didn't feel like it needed to be a physical book. So different strategies for different genres, I think.
No, I understand. And yeah, that's why, like I said, I'm certainly curious. Oh. So I'm interested in that world.
You know, diversify.
There you go. All right. Fair enough, Greg Pak. I'll let you be.
Thank you, sir. A huge pleasure.
Likewise, man. Kingsway West, Dark Horse Comics. Check out that first issue. And continued success with the totally awesome Hulk, who is proving to live up to his title. And exciting stuff coming. And yeah, The Fallen is already out. If we didn't pick it up this week, people can pick it up, I'm sure, next week.
I forgot to plug. If you are intrigued about Kingsway West, if you want to pre-order the next issues, go to kingswaywest.com. KingsWayWest.com.
There you go. Excellent, man. No, seriously, I'm glad things are working. And honestly, I think you're one of the guys that people who aspire to do what you do, we should really pay attention to how you do it.
Oh, man, thank you.
And I'm glad that everything's working well. So keep it up.
Thank you so much.
Always fun to talk to Greg Pak, and happy to welcome him back to Word Balloon. And the next conversation can't come soon enough. So great luck with Kingsway West, Totally Awesome Hulk, and Escape from New York meets Big Trouble in Little China. Really interesting projects right now for Greg Pak and beyond. Thanks a lot for listening to today's Word Balloon. We've fallen into a rhythm lately, I think, where we're promoting whatever the product is that people are talking about and then get into some deep conversation about some sort of geek trope that the person is interested in. And I'm happy to roll with that. Great conversation about Westerns today. And I've already got a couple other episodes in the bag that I'll be presenting in the next couple days. Emma Rios is coming on. It's wonderful to have Emma back. And we're talking about two books in particular, and those are Mirror and also her wonderful anthology that she does, Island. In addition to that, we talk a little bit about Pretty Deadly, comparing Mirror to Pretty Deadly, but as far as the creative process goes, that's a tremendous talk. And then Ibrahim Mustafa is going to be coming on, and man, he's got a very cool foreign intrigue, espionage story, a Nazi war hunter story called Jaeger that is available as a digital comic from a new app called Stila. And you can get the first issue for free, and Ibrahim tells us how to do that. But that, of course, inspires an entire conversation about James Bond, spy movies in general, certainly old-school spy movies. And then, as well, we're both big Superman fans, and we just talk about how great the current run at DC is of Superman. So it's great to talk to Ibrahim. And so those two conversations are really coming up in the next few days. I know I always say that, and I mean it when I say it. But then, you know, the real world kind of intervenes. But the fact that these are in the can, I think, will help these interviews get to you quicker. Plus, man, I got two others that are kind of burning. I haven't done the conversations yet, but they're coming up as far as me talking to people within the next week, all before Labor Day. I wanted to make sure that, you know, I'm covered for the Labor Day weekend and that I've got content both before and after, because, you know, sometimes people are traveling and it's tough to get somebody on the phone, you know, as the beginning of Labor Day. And then they're back. And of course, they're tired from whatever vacation time they did during Labor Day. So the good news, I think August, I'm going to go out with a bang, and welcome September with great conversation as well. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you've been enjoying what I do here at Word Balloon. Do me a favor, if you do, especially if you get the program via iTunes, would you go over there and write me a review? I've got a lot of new listeners, I could tell from the downloads. And if you like what you're hearing on Word Balloon, please share it with friends. Let people know, let your friends know. But also, if you could write a review at iTunes, that would be great. Word Balloon is brought to you by the League of Word Balloon Listeners. That's you. Thank you very much for your support. Again, if you want to subscribe to Word Balloon, if you can afford it, it's, you know, really whatever you can spare from a dollar on. But if you think what I do here is worth your time, and if you can spare a buck or two, that'd be great. Go to patreon.com/wordballoon or go to wordballoon.com and click on the Patreon page there. It will lead you to my Patreon subscription site. Thank you very much, really, for the support, League of Word Balloon listeners. Word Balloon is also brought to you by InStock Trades at instocktrades.com, where great stuff is going on at amazing prices. Let's get some old school stuff. How about the pre-code classic, This Magazine is Haunted? Great stuff from the pre-code days of the Golden Age of Comics. You got Shelley Moldoff and many other artists represented here in this very interesting Golden Age collection. It is 25% off, perfect Halloween gift. It's only $52.49, and it comes in a nice slipcase edition. Pretty snazzy stuff. You can also get the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles ongoing from IDW. Volume 3 collection features, of course, Kevin Eastman writing, Kevin Eastman drawing. Great Kevin Eastman stuff from the Turtles. It is 30% off, just $34.99. You can get Batgirl, Volume 3, excuse me, Minefields. And that's Cameron Stewart and Babs Tarr, their wonderful run. also, Brandon Fletcher doing co-writing on that. Let's see, it is 45% off, $9.34. Did I mention, ran into Brandon Fletcher at San Diego? And literally, it was one of those like 10-second, hey man, how you doing? And he's like, I got to do your show. And I'm like, yeah, you do. A long time coming, man. I'm a huge fan of Brendan's as a writer and also as a podcaster. So I really do look forward to that eventual Word Balloon. We gotta make that happen. But again, I got this laundry list of people that I really want to get on. So let's see. We've got the Defenders Epic Collection, the Six-Fingered Hand Saga. And what a great classic Defenders matchup here. 50% off on this one. That's J.M. DeMatteis and Don Perlin are the creators on this wonderful run. 50% off, just $19.99. And this is like your classic Defenders, and you got Doctor Strange, and you got Valkyrie, and you know, the Gargoyle, and all these wonderful characters, in addition to Damien Hellstrom, and I believe Devilina is in there, or perhaps, I'm not really sure. Well, let's see. It says, Doctor Strange, the Hulk, Nighthawk, Hellcat, and the Son of Satan on wild adventures into the occult. And I don't know. Let's see. They face Dracula. They face the Devil Slayer. Pretty neat stuff. So yeah, 50% off. It's just $19.99. That sounds pretty good. I mentioned before the Omega Men with Tom King and Tom's excellent collaborator, Barnaby Bagneda. I want to say his name right. There we go. The End is Near. The wonderful 12 issues is all collected in one single volume, and it's only $12.49 at InStockTrades.com. You can get The Absolute Court of Owls hardcover from Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, the wonderful epic Batman story, 45% off, $54.99. You can get 2000 AD Sci-Fi Thrillers. What a tremendous anthology of some of the great works of Pat Mills, Ian Gibson, Grant Morrison, Will Simpson, Peter Milligan, Paul Cornell. Good stuff. This is 50% off. It's just $15.50. Just some of the great deals that are happening at InStockTrades.com. Don't take my word for it. Go over there, check out some of the great deals yourself. Don't forget, if your orders are $50 or more, you'll receive free shipping. And it's a great company that gives you great books at great prices. InStockTrades.com. Thanks for listening to Word Balloon. Join us in a few days for our next Word Balloon episode. I believe it will likely be Emma Rios. And it was wonderful to get Emma back on the phone on a Sunday morning. And we enjoyed each other's company and had a great conversation. And it was great to get to know Emma a bit better. She's only been on one time before with Kelly Sue when they were just getting started with Pretty Deadly. And the book has become a mainstay since the second volume trade paperback is out, I believe, this week. And it's wonderful to catch up with Emma and see what's going on in her world with not only Pretty Deadly, but also her book, The Mirror, and Island, an excellent anthology that she does. A tremendous conversation with Emma Rios on the next Word Balloon. Please join us. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2016.